Yes.
Okay. Study Parshas Vayakel.
Anyone need a chumash?
Yes, please.
Thank you.
So we're going to start today by studying the Sfarno. And to appreciate the Sfarno, you want to open up to the beginning of Parshas Vayakel, which is Shmos Perek Lamed He. And based on this Sfarno, what we're going to be able to do is compare two psukim. One pasuk is here at the beginning of Vayakel, and the other pasuk, which also commands us in collecting funds for the building of the Mishkan, that pasuk appears at the beginning of Truma.
We've already done it, you mean?
But we haven't done this pasuk in Vayakel, which is very unique. That's why I wanted to call to your attention. So open up to Shmos Lamed Hey, and you'll see that after it says Vayakel Moshe's Kol Adas B'nei Yisrael, Moshe gathers together the entire assembly of Israel. And then if you fast forward to Pasuk Hey, what does Moshe tell the people of Israel? Kchu mitchem truma l'Hashem, kol nediv libo yivieha, eis trumas Hashem, zahav v'chesef u'nechoshes. There seems to be a redundancy in this pasuk, because the words truma l'Hashem appear twice. Once at the beginning of the pasuk, and once towards the end of the pasuk. Not only that, there seems to be an extra word in the pasuk, and that's the word yivieha. If you take out the word yivieha, it could have said just truma l'Hashem, kchu mitchem truma l'Hashem. Why did it say yivieha? What's the emphasis on the word yivieha? So if you happen to have the page that I photocopied, then you'll notice that first we start with the Ibn Ezra. The Ibn Ezra says the following, that the word Yevi'eha, which seems to be redundant, and in general there's a redundancy in the pasuk because it says Truma Hashem twice in the pasuk, Truma Hashem. The Ibn Ezra says, Hosif Levayer. Kimo, what does it mean, Hosif Levayer? Like as if to say there's an extra emphasis here. He gives an example from Shmos Perek Beis Pasuk Vav. There also, there seems to be something extra. It says, Vatiftach, and she opened right the Teva. But now I'm going to read it the way it doesn't say it. Okay, I'm just fooling you, so to speak. Vatera es hayelet, and she saw the child. But it doesn't say that. It says vatereihu, and she saw him. Here also, it could have said kol nediv libo yavi es trumas Hashem. What's yivieha? To bring her meaning the truma, because truma is lashon nekeva.
It, we would say.
Right. But it's in Lashon Nekeva because it's a feminine. So according to the Ibn Ezra, when it says Yivieha, like it says in Vatarehu, it is a kind of extra emphasis. But the Ibn Ezra admits that there are extra words, extra letters in the pasuk. So just to summarize, what we get from this Ibn Ezra is a halfway measure. I wouldn't say, you know, we're totally satisfied with Ibn Ezra. The Ibn Ezra is claiming that sometimes in the style of the Mikra, the Torah uses an extra word for emphasis.
Or a letter.
or a letter, and it's not really necessary. It could have just said Vatera es hayelet, she saw the child. Vatarei hu, like an extra emphasis. He's not going to tell you, you know, what we derive from this extra emphasis here. And here too, in Parashas Vayakel, the Torah says, Chu mitchem trumah l'Hashem, kol nediv libo. Right, it could have said, Yavias trumah l'Hashem, what's Yavieh ha? He should bring the truma. That's also just like an extra embellishment or clarification or emphasis. But at the end of the day, you know, we'd like to believe that the Torah is not just stylistic, it's not just embellishing things, that extra letters and extra words should be meaningful, should be teaching us something. So perhaps we can make some progress towards our goal of understanding the meaning of the Torah by looking into the Sfarno. The Sfarno says the following. And this you'll see in the second paragraph. Now first what we'll do is we'll just read the words of the Sfarno, and then we'll try to elucidate what the Sfarno means. You know, the Sfarno is very famous for being abridged. You know, he's very short-winded. He doesn't always tell you what he means. You know, he allows you to figure it out. It's like almost like a puzzle. He says the following. Yavi, what does the word Yavi mean? Yavi Eha. What does it say? It says in the Pasuk, right? If you have the Pasuk in front of you, Yavi Eha. Which means, says the Sfarno, it means to bring the Nedava. So even though we can understand from the fact that it says Kol Nediv Libo, a Nediv Livo is a person who is magnanimous, right? He has a Nedivus HaLev, that he's going to bring a Nedava, right? What is a Nediv Lev going to do if not bring a Nedava? But yet the Torah emphasizes Yivieha, that he should bring the Nedava. And this is going to teach us something about the way a person should bring a Nedava. Why is that so? Because the next part of the Pasuk says, Ace Trumas Hashem. Now, according to the Sfarno, there are two major points here. Point number one is that the Truma at the beginning of this Pasuk is not identical with the Truma at the end of the Pasuk. They're two different Trumas. We'll have to elaborate on that. And point number two is that the Torah is telling Bnei Yisrael that when they bring the Nedava, it should be brought with this Trumas Hashem, which again is not the same as the Truma at the beginning of the Pasuk. And therefore, says the Sfarno, the word Ace in the Pasuk means Im. Im means with.
Riboy.
With. So again, you translate the word Ace according to the Sfarno as what? With. Im. Ayin Mem. So the Nediv Libo should bring his Nedava, because Yivieh Ha means his Nedava, and that Nedava is indicated by the beginning of this Pasuk, where it says, Truma Lashem, but he should bring it Im. What does Im mean? With. What should he bring his Nedava with? Trumas Hashem. What's the Trumas Hashem? As we said before, the Trumas Hashem is not identical with the Truma Lashem at the beginning of the Pasuk. Says the Sfarno, the Trumas Hashem, okay, the Trumas Hashem at the end of the Pasuk is not a Nedava. Do you see that in the Sfarno? He says, ain't a Nedava. So the Truma Lashem at the beginning of the Pasuk is a Nedava. The Trumas Hashem at the end of the Pasuk is a Nedava. Now who can tell me what's the flip side, the antonym of a Nedava?
A Chova.
A Chova, correct. So the Sfarno claims that the Truma at the beginning of this Pasuk is a Nedava. The Truma at the end of the Pasuk is a Chova. And they're two different Trumas. Now, According to the Sfarno, when it says Truma Lashem, Lashem means I'm dedicating something of my funds for the sake of God. What's that? Is that an Adava or a Chova? Is that a voluntary gift or an obligatory gift?
Adava.
That's an Adava, correct. Truma Lashem means I'm motivated to bring a Truma for the sake of Hashem. And who am I then, if I'm motivated to do so, even though I'm not obligated? I'm an adiv lev. Okay?
I'm generous.
An adiv lev. I'm generous. I'm a magnanimous. I want to come forward with my funds, my economic assets, for the sake of Hashem. Even though I'm not obligated to do so. Okay? Now, when I bring this nedava, which is again a voluntary gift, the Torah says, Yivi'eha, bring that nedava, Ace Trumas Hashem, together with the Trumas Hashem, where it's not Lashem, but Trumas Hashem. Right? Yud Kei Vav Kei here means, this is the Truma that God demands of you. Where do we find the Truma that God demands of you? Says the Sfarno. Vehi Beka Lalgul Golis. So let's just flip a little bit fast forward here. I'm trying to move around here on this table without knocking all the stuff here. So you'll take a look in Perek Lamed Ches, which is the end of Parshas Vayakel. And there you'll see a few psukim that we want to look at. One second. Actually, I think it's maybe the beginning of Pekudei. Let's see. Yeah, beginning of Parshas Pekudei. And there in Pasuk Chavav, okay, if somebody can tell me what page it's on, I have it in the big blue Chumash. 530. If you happen to have the big blue Chumash, it's on page 230. So at least we're on the same 30, but it's either 530 or 230. It says there, Beka la Gulgoles. How much is a Beka la Gulgoles? Rashi explains. It is a Machtis HaShekel B'Shekel HaKodesh.
Where is that?
That is on page 530. Do you have
530?
Yeah. Can you find it, Harvey?
You got it?
25. Possibly 25.
Yeah.
Actually, possibly 26. But okay. We're close enough, we can round it off to 25, but it's 26. Do you have it?
Beka la Gulgoles.
What is this Beka la Gulgoles?
He says machzis
shekel. Exactly. And machza shekel, here's my question for you. Is that a voluntary gift or is that obligatory?
Obligatory.
That's obligatory. Okay. So now let's go back to the pasuk at the beginning of Vayakel and read the pasuk the way the Sfarno wants us to read the pasuk. Kru mitchem truma l'Hashem. This is a voluntary gift. Now, if you want to know what was the purpose of this voluntary gift, you can either look at the very end of this pasuk, or if you want to get even extra clarification, you'll turn back to the beginning of Parshas Truma. And that's in Shmos Perek Chaf Hei. And there too it says the words, V'yikru li Truma. And li, the word li, is similar to in our pasuk in Vayakel, the word Lashem. So in other words, according to the Sfarno, there's an identity between the phrase at the beginning of Truma, V'yikhu li Truma, and the phrase at the beginning of Vayakel, Kru mitchem Truma Lashem. Now what was the purpose of V'yikhu li Truma at the beginning of Parshas Truma? What was that collection for? David?
The Mishkan?
Correct, to build the Mishkan. This is not Machzis HaShekel. Machza Shekel was given into the Trumas HaLishka to purchase Karbonos, what's called the Karbon Tzibur, daily, whether it's the Talmud Shel Shachat, Talmud Shel Bein Havayim, the Karbon Musaf on Shabbos and Yontif. That's a whole different entity. And that was an obligatory payment of Machza HaShekel on an annual basis. In fact, this coming Shabbos, we're going to read Parsha Shkolim. You know that. Right, because it's Erev Rosh Chodesh Adar Beis, which is the main Adar, and that is what's called Machrizim al Hashkolim. We have to notify the entire Tzibur that they are obligated to come forth with the Matzis HaShekel. That's the Bek Ala Gulgoles at the beginning of Parshas Pekudei. And what the Sfarno is doing for us is he's telling us that there are two different Shruos. That this Pasuk here at the beginning of Vayakel is not a redundancy. Not at all. You should not make the mistake, says the Sfarno, and identify the Zos HaTruma Shatikhu Me'itam at the beginning of this Pasuk. Correct? With the end of this Pasuk, which says what? What does it say at the end of this Pasuk? Sorry, I lost my place here. Where is it? Chumeitchem Truma Lashem at the beginning of the Pasuk. What's Truma Lashem again? I must have had a blackboard, it would be a lot easier. What's Truma Lashem at the beginning of the Pasuk?
The voluntary.
That's the voluntary one. That's the same identical Truma at the beginning of Truma, about which the Torah testifies that even though it was voluntary, nevertheless the people of Israel came forward and passed this test with flying colors, right? To the extent to which it's probably the only fundraising campaign in history in which Moshe Rabbeinu had to say, enough! We don't want any more! Could you imagine such a thing? And that's the beginning of Pasuk Hey, Kichu Me'itchem Truma Lashem. That's the same Truma as it says at the beginning of Truma, V'yikhu Li Truma, and that's voluntary. Now the Torah wants to tell us that when we come forward, each one of Bnei Yisrael, individually with our contribution, how should we give that contribution? What should be our mental state? Says the Sfarno, that's what the Pasuk means when it says Yivi'eha. Ha means a reference to this Nidava, the Nidava V'yikhu Li Truma, which is at the beginning of Parshas Truma, and here it's called Chumi Itchem Truma Lashem. How do you bring that Nidova? Says the Torah, Ace. What does Ace mean again? I'm sorry that I'm going over this 50 times, but we got to get it straight. It's a brilliant chapter. With Truma Hashem. What's the Truma Hashem without the Lamed?
Hold on.
The Bek Ala Gulgoles, that's the Truma's Chov of the Machtzis HaShekel. So that according to the Sfarno, as opposed to the Ibn Ezra, there's nothing superfluous in this pasuk. Every word and every letter is important and has its place. The Torah doesn't waste any time here, not for literary emphasis or anything of that sort. Because again, the Chumi Chem Truma Lashem, that's the Trumas Nedava, which was commanded at the beginning of Parshas Truma to bring forward the Kesef and the Zav and the Argamon and the Talash Shani and the Sheish and everything that was necessary to build the Kalim and the Mishkan and the Mishkan itself. Called the Div Libo, who is going to bring forward that Truma Lashem? It's the Div Libo, the one whose heart prompts him because he's magnanimous. Yivieha, but now the Torah commands you bring it together with the Truma Sashem, the Truma that's obligatory, namely the Bek Ala Gulgoles at the beginning of Parashas Pekudei, which is also the beginning of Parashas Kitisa, if you remember. Because again, if you turn back for a moment to Parashas Kitisa, which we're going to read again next Shabbos, the second Torah twice in a row, the Torah says, Kitisa Rosh Bnei Yisrael, etc., etc. V'nasnu ish kofar nafsho, zeyitnu kolov rabku, machsis ha-shekel v'shekel kosh. That's absolutely obligatory. As opposed to the Truma at the beginning of Parshas Truma, not the machsis ha-shekel, but each person, based on his nedivus lev, will bring what he thinks he wants to contribute for Hashem, whether it's Zav, Kesev, etc., etc., that one is voluntary. So this is at the level of what we call Pshat. But on a deeper level, we want to know if there's a message here that we could derive from this Sfarno for Halacha and for Hashkafa and for Musar. So for that, we want to look at the end of the page that I gave you, the bottom right. There's something very important here. There are many people who come forward with a contribution called a nedava. In other words, they give, they pledge sums of money, sometimes very impressive, but they haven't yet necessarily lived up to their obligations. The Torah wants to say the following. You want to bring a Truma Lashem? You know what? The Truma Lashem, which is an Adava, that has to be accompanied, that has to be accompaniment, an accompaniment, meaning secondary to, or accompanied with, the Truma Hashem. What's Truma Hashem? That's the obligatory Truma that every Jew is obligated, and that's the Machzis HaShekel. And they are together, one with the other. It means, I'll read it to you, HaToreim Chayav LaDat, he who brings forward his funds, he has to know, Barosh HaRishona, first and foremost, that he has a chova, that he has an obligation. And if he thinks that, you know what, I'm not so concerned about obligations, I'm concerned about nedavos, I want to give nedavos. If that's his attitude, then it could be that one day he will say to himself, you know what, I took upon myself to bring this nedava, I had no obligation to do so, is, you know what, I don't have to bring the nedava. Today, this year, it's okay. That's called HaPesh HaChiv HaPesh HaHiter. I was the one who accepted upon myself this contribution voluntarily. You know what, this year, I don't have to give. And therefore the Torah wants to tell you that first and foremost what should be on your list is your obligation. Understand that the nedava is only an extension, it's secondary to and comes subsequent to the obligation. The example he gives is the following. We find that the pasuk in Yisro tells us, Vayisyatzvu betachtis ahar. When they got the Torah, they stood underneath the mountain. And Chazal say it means kaf aleim har kegigis, meaning they were obligated to accept the Torah. Later on, almost a parsha and a half later, at the end of Parshas Mishpatim, that's when Klal Yisrael come forward and they say Nase v'nishma. So what came first? What did Hashem convey to the people of Israel first? And what did He convey to them second? First came the har kegigis, the absolute obligation. Then you want to feel, okay, I'm going to expand my obligation. I'm going to give more than I have to. There are certain mitzvahs that I'm not required to do, but I'm going to put myself into that obligation. That comes second. That's the, shall we say, the elect. Someone elects to a nasa v'nishma, and he wants to go beyond. And now we want to connect this with the Sfarno back in Parshas Truma. Back on the pasuk, v'yikhu li Truma. What does it mean, v'yikhu li Truma? The Sfarno back at the beginning of Parshas Truma is bothered perhaps by the question, why does it say v'yikhu li Truma? Take for me the Truma. You know that the Sanhedrin, the higher court of Israel, was obligated, they were authorized to see to it that Klal Yisrael pay up their dues. Says the Sfarno, Amar li Yisrael, Hashem tells Moshe to tell the people of Israel, and now you're on the left side of the page, Shechafatzti, what I desire is Gaboyim, Yigbu, that the Gaboyim, which the treasurers, and they should be in charge of collecting these funds, be Eidei Truma, Ba'adi Truma. Ba'adi means for my sake, a truma, a contribution. Ubazet sivo lahem sheyigbu. It doesn't say v'yitnu li truma, which would imply that this total 100% voluntary from beginning to end. The v'yikhu implies that there's going to be some level of obligation.
Compulsion.
Correct. And who's compelled? Who's obligated? The Gaboyim are responsible to collect the Truma, the Yikhu. They have to collect the Truma. The Yisrael, but Klal Yisrael, Lohim Tinu, they didn't even wait Sheyigvu HaSanhedrin until Sanhedrin would come forward, the Yikhu, and collect. I will take F Yatsu Milifnei Moshe, as soon as they heard Moshe say, the Yikhu Li Truma, Hey, view ad beli die. Right, this is going to be the pasuk at the beginning of Pkudei that they brought even more than was necessary. So what's important here, again, from this perspective of the Sfarno, is that we have two elements here. One element is chova, v'yikhu. There's got to be some element of chova that exists within the context of Trumas HaMishkan. Even before Klal Yisrael came forward spontaneously, out of a sense of nedivus lev, of their self-prompted magnanimous love for the mitzvah, even before that, there had to be an element of v'yikhu, of obligation. And now we'll see another Sfarno. The Sfarno says, v'yikhu li truma me'eis kol ish. What does it mean? V'yikhu li truma me'eis kol ish asher yidvenu libo. Here the Gaboyim are obligated to go around and collect for the truma and the building of the Mishkan. Tziva Hashem, God commands them, me'eis kol ish asher yidvenu libo shelo yigvu b'zroa. That this is a voluntary gift, and bizroa means compelling. The Gaboyim are not authorized to compel the people, to force them to come forward with their contributions. We find other contributions which are compulsory. Ke'inyan, like we find, shememashkinin al hatstaka, which means that if we have to collect staka money to support whatever, support the poor people, and there are those who have the capacity to give financially, they are doing well, they're secure. Then there's halach of memashkin in alatstok. If the people refuse on their own will to bring forward their funds, then we will confiscate their possessions until they will come forward and give the money. But here, in the case of Truma, at the beginning of Parshas Truma, v'yikhu li truma, mikol isha she yidvenu libo, yigbu min ha-misnadvim bilvad. We cannot force anyone and compel anyone to come forward with his contribution. It's going to be misnadvim. We can't force it. It's got to be benedava, mikol isha she yidvenu libo. And he writes, ha-rei ze b'bchinas b'derech, if a person reveals his desire to give when he's not obligated to do so, his sofo sheyizke lechiyuv meito yisparach, eventually Hashem will grant him an obligation. Which is greater, my friends? A voluntary contribution or an obligatory contribution? Just the opposite, Joel. This is called Gadol HaMetzuveh V'Yoseh Yoseh Mimisha Eino Metzuveh V'Yoseh. When a person volunteers for a mitzvah, he gets schar. We don't want to belittle that. He gets merits for it. But the greatest merits he gets when he's obligated to do, when he fulfills his obligation. And therefore, if he starts with this truma, and out of a genuine desire, authentic desire to give for the sake of the building of the Mishkan, he voluntarily gives, then ultimately he will get the primary reward for doing a mitzvah as a mitzuveh v'yoseh, as obligatory. Achrei ra'os Hashem es ruach hisnadvuso. When Hashem becomes aware of his spirit, that he wants to give voluntarily, God is concerned, Yidog, he'll guarantee l'schuso, l'zakoso, to make sure that he will merit schar shel mitzuva v'yose. So it comes out the following. There are two trumos. One truma is machzis ha-shekel that we saw. Bekal ha-gulgolas is obligatory at the beginning of Parshas Pkudei, and also the beginning of Parshas Kitisa. And that obligatory machzis ha-shekel is for all generations, even today, that we don't have the ability to bring a karbon on the mizbeach, and then no karbonos tzibur, there's no lishka from which we can take the funds of the machzis ha-shekel and purchase a karbon tzibur. Nevertheless, we still have the concept of machzis ha-shekel. We still have a halacha l'doros of kofer nefesh, and that's the meaning that we have today, to give machzis ha-shekel, and certainly the mitzvah of tztaka is an extension, or another, shall I say, expression of machzis ha-shekel. It's a mitzvah l'doros, and it's obligatory. However, only at one time in Jewish history there was a voluntary truma, Chad Pa'amit he calls it, for the sake of building the Mishkan. The first truma, which is obligatory, and that's the primary one, is called Trumas Hashem. The second one, which is voluntary, is called Truma Lashem. And therefore the Torah in this pasuk at the beginning of Vayakhel says the Sfardo is teaching us a very important lesson. That the Trumas Hisnadvus, that Truma, which is voluntary, the Truma Lashem, should come together with Trumas Chova, the Trumas Hashem, so that the Truma of the Chova should have that impact on the person who contributes. And why? Because ultimately, Gadol HaMetzuvah V'Yoseh, how much greater is the person who fulfills his obligation than he who volunteers on his own volition. And Joel, just to pick up on your point here, this is counterintuitive. If you would have asked me intuitively, which is greater? A person who volunteers, he's not obligated, a person who's I would have said, give more credit to someone who voluntarily gives. But that's not the Torah's Hashkafa. The Torah sees it exactly opposite. This is the Chiddush of the Torah. The Torah, in its great depth, sees that first and foremost comes the obligation. That's what's going to happen, your fulfillment of your obligation. That's what's going to have an impact on your soul. Beyond that, you want to give b'snadvus, that's fine. You want to give voluntarily, above and beyond the call of duty. Wonderful. But never understand that that's your primary goal. That is a secondary goal. And therefore, whenever you're involved in the project of voluntary, you should see the element and fulfill the element of that which is obligatory. When you have A plus B integrated together, when the chova is integrated together with the nedava, that's when the nedava becomes meaningful. And so a person who, let's say, on an annual basis decides to voluntarily give funds and contribute for a cause, it's a nedava, but he doesn't view it as a nedava. He views that nedava as an extension of, integrated with his chova. He doesn't just wake up one morning and say, okay, last year I gave you nedava, this year, go fly the kite. Okay, that's number one. And number two, I wanted to share with you another thing about Machzis HaShekel. If you can, I didn't know how many people were showing up, so I only made 3 copies, and I apologize for that. This obligatory Machzis HaShekel, correct? It's a specific sum of money. So Reuven is very poor. Shimon is very wealthy. It makes sense, does it not, that Reuven, who's destitute, should only bring a quarter of a shekel, a tenth of a shekel, a couple of agorot. Shimon, on the other hand, is very wealthy. He should be bringing 100 shekel. And what does the Torah say? Ha'asher lo yarbe v'adal lo yamit mi machzis ha'shekel. The asher is not allowed to give more than a machzis ha'shekel. The ani is not allowed to give less than a machzis ha'shekel. And the Ramban writes that this is a lotase. This is counted in the 613. If a rich person would want to give more than a machzis ha'shekel, he violates a law in the Torah. So back about 50 years ago in Europe, there was a yeshiva called Mir, the Mir Yeshiva. Now it's in Yerushalayim. And the Mashgiach in Europe was Rabbi Yerucham Levavitz, one of the great giants in the Musar movement. And he asks the following question. I don't understand. What kind of lotas said? Every lotas, every mitzvah in the Torah is meant to fight the Yetzirah. On the contrary, if this rich person wants to give more than he's obligated to do so, no, we're telling him, overcome your desire to give more. That's a challenge that you face. That's a great nisayon. And give only a machzis ha'shekel and not a penny more. Why? What is this inner battle? Every lav in the Torah, you know, the Torah says that you're not allowed to eat lobster, right? So, I don't know, I never ate lobster, but somebody told me that it's very, very special. I'm a Baal Tshuva, I have a very good friend. He said, I look at it and I can't even begin to understand how you could eat that stuff. But, you know, shrimp and lobster, I see it crawling around in the tank and so forth. He says, Rabbi, it's something out of this world. So look, I can only trust him. He's a kfeila, what we call in, we're learning Yerodea now, kfeila, he's an expert. So he said, here, for someone like my friend, you know, he's got a battle every time he sees lobster, you know, because he likes that stuff. But in the case of the usher, wants to give, what battle is he? Adorama, let him get away cheap. All he has to give is a machzis ha-shekel. So Yerucham Emir said the following, the second paragraph. He says, if you look at it carefully, you'll see a great psychological insight here. He says, imagine that the Jewish people are getting together to collect money and gold and silver, etc., for the building of the Mishkan of the Beis HaMikdash. And imagine that every single person gives the same amount. Okay, the ani, for him it's a great nisayon, a great challenge. He doesn't have a half a shekel. He's going to have to really, you know, work very hard, eke it out, you know, in order to fulfill that mitzvah. He may have to sell some of his own possessions that he has, the clothing on his back, in order to gather one penny after another penny until finally he collects that sum of machzis ha-shekel. He says, but the real challenge, he says, is to the usher. Why? The usher is sitting there watching the ani give a matzis ha-shekel. And he wants to give a lot more than a matzis ha-shekel. Let's read the language of Rabbi Yerucham. Beautiful language. He says, "Bioso tzarch limkar es kol shelo." The poor person has to sell everything. Kedei lekabeitz pruta lepruta velo pam, and it's not on one occasion. It's quite often. Yimna ochel mipiv. He's got to deny himself food. He's got to skimp and collect pennies until he can raise the funds, you know, to give a machzis shekel. But of course, even though that's a great challenge, he says, Rabbi Yerucham, ka'ayin ke'efes, it doesn't even register on the Richter scale, le'umat in kadres, with the nisayon shel ha'asher, the challenge of the rich person. He's also obligated to give, but he can't give one penny more than the ani. He's got to give exactly the same as the ani, who's the low person in the community. How embarrassed is this usher? Micherpa kazu, he's humiliated. Lishtavos, I'm the same as the Evyonim, as the poor people, the poorest of poor, and I can't give more than them? Tiv oshala osher, the natural propensity or the psychological motivation of a rich person, lishlot al kol svivav. He wants to show off. He's the big, powerful guy. You know, he's the Donald. He's the guy who's running for office, and he has so much money. And the onam halo lachu ashiris kol olam liatzmam. The rich people control the entire world. Vehine. Harashim ubale deos. Hainam harashim. They are the leaders. You know, they're politically strong and powerful and influential. They have the opinions. You know, we have in Yiddish a saying, der vat hater, der meyer hater deo. You know, if he has the 100, then he has the opinion. He will determine the policy of the organization. Not in our case. I'm saying in other organizations. Bechol ashelos aklolios. In any general issues. And here, he can't even show off that he's a little bit better off than the Ani Shebaniyin. And even though the Gemara says in Chul and Ashirim Makamtsim that sometimes Ashirim have a tendency of being very stingy, can anybody give me another word for that?
Tight.
Tight? You're tight?
Me.
What?
Me.
Me meaning selfish? Me?
Mean.
Oh, mean. M-E-A-N. Mean. Oh, okay. No, there's another word in English for miserly, right? Miserly. Someone who hoards money for himself. It's very hard for them to give money. That's only says makamtim heim chak b'mokum shelo yarvichu b'nesinosim. If they gain and they gain nothing from giving of their money, they get very tight fisted and hoarding the money. They're stingy. I will be ad kavod. But if it means that they get certain honor, yidnu es kol shalem b'yad rechava. They'll give everything with a very, very magnanimous giving. And therefore, it's a great challenge to the Ashir, Litain, to give Kechol Yoshvei Iro, like all those who live in his community. That's exactly the Hepech of Midas Ashir, because he wants the covet. I'm the big shot. Ein lecha nisayin gadol la'ashir k'nisayin azeh li'al shavu lechol aniyim iblishi yibadol lehem b'kul. And I'm reminded of a story. They say that in Yerushalayim back about a century ago, even more than a century ago, the poverty was amazing, and there was one wealthy Jew in town, and he wouldn't give anything. So once Rav Shul Salant, who was the Rav in Yerushalayim, said to the Gabbai, "We got to go see him. If it's a situation, is desperate. People are so poor." So the Gabbai said, "Rebbe, you're wasting your time. You can't get a dime out of him." So Rav Shul said, "But we're desperate. We have no choice. We have to go." So when the Rav came in, you know, the usher stood up for him. He realized, look who's coming to collect funds. And Rav Shmuel Salant started describing in vivid terms what the aniyim are going through. So at one point, the usher picks up the keys to his safe and he's shaking with them. He says, "Rebbe, I can't open the safe. I can't. I just can't do it. But here, you take the keys and take whatever you need." You know, sometimes Ashirim, they just can't give, you know. So if you get to the point at which at least they throw the keys in your hands, that's better than nothing. But the truth is that it's really a problem, because, you know, the Ashir wants to show off. I know that, you know, where I daven in the morning, they always, on Mondays, Thursdays, and Shabbos as well, they auction off the aliyahs. And, you know, I tried a few times, you know, but I can't go up against these rich guys, you know. So one time I came to the Gabbai, I said, "Listen, I have yahrzeit today. Is there anything you can do for me?" So he went over to two of the rich guys in the community. He says, "Lozo, you know, so I got it for 30 shekel. It was like, they let me live. Usually I'm, you know, 30 shekel, you don't get anything. Forget about aliyah." And here, this is such a deep psychological insight, you know. And I'm thinking to myself, you know, they say about the Ashirim that in the city of Brisk, that's where my Rebbe's grandfather was the Rav, Reb Chaim Brisk. They once asked him, "What is the tafkid? What is the role of a rabbi in a community?" So they thought he would say, you know, Paskin Shilas and teach Torah, his name. The role of the rabbi is to convince the rich people to part with their money so that we can support the poor people. That's the main responsibility of the Rav. I wanted to talk to you in the second paragraph on the page that I gave out about Shviras Haluchos. And there are a number of different approaches as to answer the question, why is it that Moshe Rabbeinu broke the Luchos? I think the most revolutionary approach is that of the Rashbam. The Rashbam says, if you look carefully at the Pasuk, it doesn't say that Moshe broke the Luchos. It says that Moshe dropped the Luchos, he says. And the Luchos were very heavy, says the Rashbam. And Moshe couldn't carry them. So my Rebbe asked the Kash on the Rashbam. He said, "Wait a minute. These were the same two, what are they called in English? Tablets? Or is there another word for it? I don't know. Tablets. These are the same two tablets that Moshe carried up the mountain. So why is it that all of a sudden they're too heavy for him?" So my Rebbe said that what the Rashbam means is the following. HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells Moshe Rabbeinu, "Lech reid, you have to go down from the mountain." And Chazal say that Lech Reid means Reid Migdulascha. Go down from your greatness. Your greatness is identified with the people of Israel. So my Rebbe said the following. We have a concept of Shlichus. Shlichus means a mission. Every person is given a mission. He was created at a certain time in a certain society in order to fulfill his responsibility, his goal, his contribution, his responsibility. We don't always know what that responsibility is. But certainly in the case of Moshe, we understood very well that his shlichus is on behalf of Klal Yisrael. When a person has a mission, that's what my Rebbe used to say, he has energies that go beyond natural energies. I was thinking out loud, you know, imagine the case of a mother whose child is never stuck underneath a car, there was an accident. And there are historical documents that testify that she's able to lift up a car to save a child. Something that al pi teva makes no sense. How could she lift up a car? We call it adrenaline, right? There's an extra ounce of energy. Moshe Rabbeinu, on the way up to the mountain, he had that extra energy that was supplied by his shlichus. He knew he was a shliach for Klal Yisrael, and he was able to carry a weight against the law of gravity. You know, he was going up a mountain that you and I know that Moshe, as great as he was powerful, but he couldn't do it, says the Rashbam. And then Hashem told him, ball game over. You're no longer a shliach. Lech reid, kishiches amcha. At that point, Moshe Rabbeinu couldn't hold on to the luchos. They were too heavy, and
He had to drop them.
They dropped, I guess you could say. But that's a very radical approach of the Rashbam. The more classical approach is the way Chazal understood it, that Moshe destroyed the luchos, Yashar Koach Shashibarta, HaKadosh Baruch Hu even gave him a Yashar Koach Shashibarta. So my Rebbe said the following, and then we'll take a look and we'll see what the Sfas Emes has to say. Rav Soloveitchik used to say the following, that based on the Medrash says that when you marry a woman, you have to give her a shtar, right? Today we give a ksuba, it's a document. And that document clinches the marriage. The document that would clinch the marriage relationship in the bris between HaKadosh Baruch Hu and Knesset Yisrael, what was the shtar kiddushin? It was the luchos. And as long as Moshe Rabbeinu had the luchos, he was in charge of delivering the luchos to Klal Yisrael. That's called a shliach laholacha. Shliach laholacha means that I appoint you to be my agent to bring the shtar kiddushin or the shtar ksuba to my wife to be. And when she receives the shtar, at that point the kiddushin is clinched. But Moshe Rabbeinu was afraid that if he would bring the luchos to Klal Yisrael, then the marriage would be valid, would be solidified, it would be halachically validated, and at that point, the avera, the sin of chet ha'egel, would be like eshes isha zinsa, like Nebuchadnezzar, a married woman who had an adulterous relationship. It's the most severe disloyalty that the halacha recognized. Timin yeharig al yav. So Moshe Rabbeinu said the following, I want to protect the people of Israel. As long as the shtar kiddushin is not delivered, then the marriage relationship is not solidified, it's not clinched. And therefore we don't have the status of that terrible avera of immorality. In the second set of luchos, then it was different. Then Moshe Rabbeinu was called the shliach lekabola. That's a different kind of a shliach. There, the very moment that he got the luchos, the marriage relationship was clinched. But the Sfas Emes has a different pshat. Take a look at the Sfas Emes. I thought this was pretty fascinating. You'll see it on the bottom of your page. Almost at the bottom. The Medrash says that Kevon Sharoah Moshe Rabbeinu She'en LiYisrael Amida, as soon as Moshe Rabbeinu realized that the divine wrath would destroy the people of Israel, Chiber Atzmo Imahem, Moshe Rabbeinu connected himself with the people of Israel. Heim chatu v'ani chatasi. Now exactly what the chait of Moshe Rabbeinu is, we're not sure. According to one version in the Medrash, HaKadosh Baruch Hu was holding on to the luchos, and it was a tug of war. Moshe Rabbeinu was pulling the luchos out of Kaviyoch, the hand of God. And God kept pulling it back until Moshe persevered and he took the luchos. But whatever it is, it was a chutzpah on Moshe's part. And Moshe says, I'm going to connect myself with the people of Israel. You want to condemn them for their sins? Then I'm with them together. Condemn me. That's the connection. And then the Medrash says that what convinced Moshe Rabbeinu that he had to destroy the luchos? Ra, osios parchos biavir. He saw the letters of the luchos were flying out of the tablets and floating through the air. Lachain shiber osam, he destroyed them. The Rebbe says, what's this all about? Nira v'bira ha'ina ki b'vaday ha'torah toli v'achonas b'nei Yisrael. The Torah itself is a mirror image of the people of Israel. When they prepare themselves and dedicate themselves to the Torah, to accept the Torah, then there's such a thing called the luchos. The Torah exists. The Torah says, charus ala luchos, that the osios are engraved on the luchos. But Chazal say that what is the word charus, if you conjugate it in a different way with the vowels, it's cherus. Cherus means freedom. Freedom from Yetzirah. As soon as Bnei Yisrael are freed from the shackles of the Yetzirah, from the evil inclination, they're dedicated exclusively to fulfill the will of God, then it's charus ala luchos. V'kashe, ma pirish ala luchos? What does it mean, al haluchos? You know, you could have said, ba luchos, what's al haluchos? Rakefisha mashen nechkak v'nechra sa'oras ator b'libos b'nei Yisrael, commensurate to the level in which b'nei Yisrael are able to engrave the Torah on their hearts, kach nechkeku osios b'luchos. So again, the luchos are a mirror image of Klal Yisrael. When Klal Yisrael succeed in making sure that the luchos are, that the Torah is engraved on their hearts, and they are totally exclusively dedicated to the film of the Torah, then the osios haTorah and the osios haLuchos are engraved on the luchos. And the Torah says, uksavtem alevavchem. It means ksiva belev, luach libayo. We have to write the Torah, engrave it, and inscribe it on the lev, on the heart. Lachen, kishachatu b'nei Yisrael, when the people of Israel sinned, osios parchas ba'avir. If the Torah is no longer engraved on the hearts of the Jewish people, that in a mirror image is going to be reflected in the luchos. The osios of the luchos are no longer engraved on the luchos.
They're flying in the air.
They're flying in the air. No, but there's one person who's the exception. And that's Moshe Rabbeinu of Hashem Shalom Chata Bemis. In truth, he wasn't guilty of any sin. And therefore, Hoya Bekocho, he had in his power, Lahachzik HaTorah, to maintain the possession over the Torah so that it could continue to exist, so that the Osios would still be Charis Alaluchos. And therefore, HaKadosh Baruch Hu turns to Moshe and says to him, V'esa Oschol Goy Gadol, you will be the father of a great nation. Forget about Klal Yisrael. Ach, but Moshe Rabbeinu is unwilling to get on board, to agree to such an arrangement. But Masar Nafsho Bavur Bnei Yisrael, the Lo Rotzo Lifrod Atzma, he doesn't want to separate from the people of Israel. Al Yidei Zesha Chiber Atzmo Imoim Velo Nifrash Mehem, since he connected himself to the people of Israel, he would not separate from them. Hayachaviv Etzlo, what was beloved to Moshe Rabbeinu was Klolus Bnei Yisrael, the entity of Israel, and that was even greater to him than the Luchos. V'hayodea, and he knew deep down that Ratzon HaBorei, that the will of Hashem was Kness Yisrael Chaviv and all of Me'akol. And therefore, Al Yidei Zegufa Yosios Parchos, Hashem, Moshe understood, in a choice between the Luchos and Bnei Yisrael, would certainly choose to forego on the Luchos, to give up on the Luchos for the sake of Klal Yisrael. And therefore, Shiber Osam, Moshe Rabbeinu destroyed them. So it comes out, according to the Rebbe, according to the Gera Rebbe, the act of destroying the Luchos is symbolic of Hashem's choice of Klal Yisrael. Moshe Rabbeinu destroys the Luchos because although Osios Parchos Ba'avir and the Luchos now are worthless, but nevertheless, Klal Yisrael still remains beloved in the eyes of Hashem. So his act of breaking the Luchos really demonstrates in front of everyone that Klal Yisrael are even greater than the Luchos. And Amir Hashem, Klal Yisrael will do tshuva, Hashem will accept that tshuva, and then it will be a restoration of the luchos of the Torah itself. Alright, I'll stop here, and if there are any questions or comments, we'll take them. I wish everyone a great day and a great week. You were very quiet today. I was hoping.
No, I didn't want
to. That's okay. You didn't have to. But a few different things that we covered today. First of all, the connection between the two trumos. The one is the truma lashem, which is voluntary. The other is trumas hashem, which is the bekal gos, that's obligatory. And the Sfarno wants to combine those two to make sure that the chova has the impact on the nedava, and that's primary. The chova is primary. Second thing we spoke about is our asher lo yarba. Why is it that the asher has a challenge here that he shouldn't give more than a maksis hashekel? And finally, of three different interpretations as to why Moshe Rabbeinu destroyed the luchos.
It occurs to me that between obligatory and voluntary. Is related to the whole tension in Yiddishkeit between authority and autonomy, between obedience and spontaneity.
Right.
Which is
good. Thanks so much.
Particularly in the modern environment, that much more.
And the emphasis in Chazal is always on the obligatory element. You know, halavai. First, we should try to live up to our required obligation. Then you want to go beyond and take on.
Yeah.
See, you have two extremes. You have some people, for example, in the midst of Torah study, that'll give their whole lives, you know, dedicate themselves every spare moment to the study of Torah, and that's great. But on the other extreme, you have people who don't learn at all, and they're remiss in their very basic obligation. So the Torah wants to emphasize that, look, it's great that you want to volunteer and then go beyond, but first start with the basic obligation. And I think that's a very profound message here that the Sfarno brings out to light in many different ways. You know, there's always going to be an element of obligation, and the hisnadvus, you know, the voluntary nature, will never be disconnected from the chova. It's always got to be rooted and an extension of the chova. It should never stand on its own.
We were talking last week, and obviously it's an ongoing issue about modern orthodoxy, and that the tropism, which I call it, the leaning toward newness and pushing and creativity, and particularly in the world that I live in, right, particularly who I am, as a Baal Tshuva, I'm living with people who are, some of them are have attitudes toward the yeshiva education that they've had, and some of them are just living in so much in the modern world that the small things, the things that you have to do, doesn't matter so much. It's what's new. It's what can give us.
I think there's a little bit of gaiva in that approach. A little bit of gaiva of conceit, of haughtiness. You know, you have to do something that'll impress others. You know, instead of trying to dedicate yourself to understand on a deeper level. You know, here I'm no youngster, and I every time I learn something in the Torah, I see deeper and deeper meanings, and I'm not even reaching the tip of the iceberg. You know, so I say that there's so much in our tradition that's so profound. Why not dedicate ourselves to understand that? Okay, I'm going to get moving to my next meeting. I go over now to Glide. You know, have you heard of it? It's we have a number of people in our community that work in an organization called Glide. Yeah, it's a they developed a technology by which you can read about it online if you ever get a chance. That you can send an SMS message. Excuse me, you can send a video by SMS.
Uh-huh.
So if let's say you want to send in a minute and a half a lot of text, and you don't have the time or the ability to write it out,
right,
especially for illiterate people, it's right, great. So you just video yourself, and they on the receiving end are getting it in live time.
What are you doing with it?
No, I'm saying you're sending this video over the computer.
What is your involvement with it?
Oh, I give a shear during that lunch break.
Where is it?
Do you know where Malcha is? You know,
yeah,
where
sure,
the mall? So next door to the mall is something called Gan Technologi, the technological park.
It's high tech.
So a number of our guys are together with this company. So I go over there to give them a little bit of Torah, you know, during their lunch break.
You had asked me to remind you about Shabbos. Is that still...
Yeah, sure. Okay.